I signed my name on a picnic table between rows of sleeping vines, and the paper drank the ink like thirsty soil. The seller poured celebratory wine into plastic cups as if the land itself had already agreed to love me back. The air smelled like wet cedar and ambition. I remember the exact sentence that made the whole thing feel safe. "Clean title," my attorney said, voice bright with certainty. "Routine." Routine is a word that should come with a warning label. 2 weeks later, a number called my phone, and the person on the other end spoke like a nurse delivering test results. Calm, precise, unapologetic. They referenced a loan I'd never seen, a lien I'd never approved, and a foreclosure timeline that moved faster than seasons. I laughed at first because the alternative was nausea. By the time I found the second mortgage, by the time I understood the first hadn't even been first, I could taste metal in my mouth. The vineyard didn't look different. The vines didn't tremble. The gravel road still crunched under my tires like a familiar promise. But the paperwork in my lap turned the land into something else. Not a dream, a trap with a view. I didn't come from land. I came from rent, from lease renewals and moving boxes and landlords who used the word market like a personal religion. The vineyard was supposed to be my exit from that life, the kind of story that made people lean in when I told it. City guy, first investment, a real asset, something green that produced something beautiful. The listing photos did most of the seducing. Morning fog rolling low over neat rows, a weathered barn that looked like it held history instead of mice, a small farmhouse with a porch swing that suggested slow Saturdays and clean decisions. The numbers somehow made sense. Not perfect sense, but hopeful sense. Enough to wake up early and start believing. The seller, Graham, didn't feel like a salesman. He felt like a man relieved to be leaving. Mid-50s, sun-worn skin, a soft voice that carried fatigue. He told me he was retiring to be near his sister. He told me the vineyard was ready for someone with energy. He told me he'd built it with his hands. I heard that and pictured calluses. I pictured honesty. I brought my attorney, Miles, because I'd promised myself I wouldn't be the kind of man who made a purchase like this with vibes and optimism. Miles wore the kind of suit that made even dirt look like a contract. He spoke in measured sentences and asked for documents with gentle authority. Graham complied with an almost theatrical willingness. Folders, scans, timestamps. Each request met with a smile that said, "See? Nothing to hide." The banker I spoke with sounded pleased by the idea. "Land holds value," she said. "Agricultural use, potential tourism, future appreciation." She used the word diversification the way priests use salvation. The process moved like a well-oiled machine. Appraisal, inspection, insurance quote, title search. The usual steps, each one a checkpoint that made the next feel earned. Every time I hesitated, someone supplied a phrase designed to smooth the crease in my forehead. Normal. At closing, Miles sat beside me and tapped the stack of papers with a capped pen, guiding me through places to sign. Graham sat across, hands folded, watching like a man attending his own memorial. A notary scanned my ID, smiled politely, and stamped. I remember the moment I looked up from my last signature and saw the vineyard outside the window, rows of bare vines like quiet handwriting across a hill. It felt like the world had finally accepted me as someone legitimate. Afterward, we celebrated on the property because it felt appropriate. Graham brought a bottle from his last harvest, and we drank standing in the cold, our breath visible. He raised his cup and said, "To the next chapter." I went home that night with a folder heavy enough to make my shoulder ache. I should have felt exhausted. Instead, I felt buoyant, like I'd been walking underwater my whole life, and finally found air. The first hint that something was wrong arrived as a delay. The deed recording took longer than Miles expected. He explained it away as backlog. He made a call, then another. His tone stayed light. "County offices move slowly," he said, "nothing to worry about." Then the mail came, a thick envelope official, with a return address from a bank I didn't recognize. Inside was a notice addressed to the property, to owner-occupant, informing of default proceedings. Dates, amounts, a loan number, language that didn't ask permission, it announced reality. I read it twice, then a third time, as if repetition might change the ink. I called Miles' voicemail, I called again, I paced my kitchen until my footsteps started to sound like argument. When Miles finally answered, his voice still carried calm, but it had acquired a new edge, alertness, with the faintest tremor beneath. Send a photo, he said. I did, silence while he read. Then this is impossible. He sounded offended on my behalf, which should have comforted me. It didn't. It felt like watching a pilot stare at a cockpit warning light and insist planes weren't supposed to do that. Miles met me at his office the next morning with a file already open on his desk, pages spread like autopsy photos. He'd printed the notice, highlighted sections, scribbled in the margins. He kept saying should be caught in title, should be disclosed, should be impossible. I started to hate that word. It belonged to a world where systems behaved. He called the number on the notice while I sat across from him, hands clasped so tight my knuckles looked bleached. A woman answered, professional, efficient. Miles introduced himself. He asked for verification, then asked for documentation. Her voice never rose, never sharpened. It didn't need to. She confirmed the loan's existence. She confirmed the default. She confirmed that notices had been sent for months to the property address and to a P.O. box associated with Graham. Miles asked for the lien recording date. The date was before my offer, before my inspection, before the first glass of celebratory wine. Miles asked for the original promissory note. The woman said a copy could be provided through a secure portal after identity verification. Miles hung up and stared at his desk as if the wood grain had something to confess. That lien exists, he said softly now. It's recorded. My mouth went dry, so the title wasn't clean. His eyes flicked up. Title insurance exists for this reason. He said it like a lifeline, like a rope thrown into dark water. I grabbed onto it immediately because the alternative was sinking in front of him like a child. We called the title company. Another professional voice, another measured cadence. The representative asked for policy numbers, files, closing dates. The representative placed us on hold. Hold music is a special kind of cruelty. Cheerful sounds designed to pretend time is harmless. When the representative returned, the explanation arrived wrapped in politeness. The lien had been missed due to indexing discrepancy. The claim could be opened. The matter would be investigated. Additional documentation would be required. The timeline could vary. I asked how long. The representative didn't give a number. Miles asked more pointedly. The representative repeated varies. Then came the next envelope. Different bank, different loan number. Another notice, another default, another timeline. I sat on the floor of my apartment and laid the papers out in front of me like a failed magic trick. Two mortgages, both older than my purchase, both in default, both moving toward foreclosure like trains already in motion. I called Graham, straight to voicemail. I called again, voicemail. Miles sent emails, no response. I drove to the vineyard on a weekday, tires spitting gravel, heart beating in my throat as if speed could outpace paperwork. The farmhouse looked exactly as it had on closing day. Porch swing still, barn doors closed, vines silent in their winter sleep. No one answered when I knocked. I tried the door. Locked, I walked the perimeter like a man, checking whether land could lie. I found the mailbox. Inside were months of unopened mail shoved back like shame. Bank letters, county notices, something from an attorney's office. It looked less like neglect and more like someone had been collecting the evidence of a crime, neatly, patiently, in the most ordinary place. I stood there with a handful of envelopes and felt the vineyard tilt in my mind. The dream didn't evaporate. It curdled. Miles finally reached Graham's broker, a man named Trevor, whose voicemail greeting sounded like a grin. Trevor returned the call with an irritated friendliness that made my skin crawl. Trevor claimed ignorance. Trevor said Graham had disclosed everything. Trevor said the deal was done. Trevor suggested speaking with my attorney, as if Miles wasn't already on the line. Miles asked a simple question. Where was Graham? Trevor didn't answer directly. Trevor mentioned travel. Trevor mentioned personal matters. Trevor mentioned that sales were final. Miles's voice sharpened. A material defect in title. Trevor interrupted with a sigh that performed exhaustion. Everyone signs what everyone signs. Folks can feel surprised later, but signatures don't change. I heard my own breathing in the quiet after the call ended. It sounded animal. I wanted to scream. I wanted to throw the envelopes like rocks. Instead, I called the county recorder's office and asked for copies of the recorded mortgages. I asked for anything tied to Graham's name. The clerk was polite. The clerk was indifferent. The clerk existed on the safe side of my problem. When the documents arrived by email, I stared at them until my eyes ached. The first mortgage, the second. And then, hidden in the timeline like a knife in a drawer, another record, a home equity line, smaller but still real, still secured by the same property. Three debts, all tied to the vineyard, all recorded, all invisible to me until now. I looked at my closing file. The title search report sat there, crisp and confident, listing none of them. The system hadn't protected me. It had introduced me. The strangest part wasn't the panic. The strangest part was the way my mind tried to make it normal. I caught myself rationalizing, building explanations as if I could renovate reality into something livable. Maybe the first notice was an error. Maybe the second bank had mixed addresses. Maybe the recorder's office had duplicated entries. My brain chased maybe, the way a drowning man chases light. Miles didn't indulge it. He filed the title insurance claim, sent demand letters to Graham, contacted the broker's office formally. He spoke to a litigation colleague, then another. Each call shifted the mood from confusion to containment, like preparing for a storm that had already landed. The banks didn't pause. Their letters kept arriving on schedule. Their language remained clean and sterile, like paperwork could wash blood off hands. I learned new terms without wanting them. Acceleration, cure period, trustee sale, priority, subordination. Every term was a tool that turned the vineyard into a ledger entry. The title company opened an investigation. Weeks passed, another week, then another. Their updates arrived as carefully empty sentences, ongoing review, additional research, awaiting third-party documentation. Their tone never admitted urgency, it never needed to. The foreclosure timelines carried urgency on their own. Miles secured a temporary delay by sending proof of my purchase and evidence of the claim. One bank agreed to consider a pause. The other bank refused, citing contractual obligations. The third lender didn't respond at all, which was its own kind of statement. I drove back to the vineyard again, this time with a locksmith and a copy of my deed. I told myself I was doing something practical, securing the property, checking the buildings, protecting the asset. The locksmith looked at the farmhouse, then looked at my paperwork, then did the work without comment. The click of the lock opening sounded louder than it should have, like an alarm. Inside, the house felt staged for my guilt. Minimal furniture, bare counters, a few framed photos left behind as if accidentally. Graham beside the vines, arm around someone I didn't recognize. A holiday card on the mantel addressed to him with a handwritten note about keeping faith. In the kitchen drawer, I found a key ring with labels, barn, shed, office, and a single tag that read P.O. Box. That one hit me like a slap. It meant the mail wasn't missed. It was managed, collected, curated. In a desk upstairs, I found an envelope already opened, folded carefully back into itself. A letter from an attorney. The first line used a phrase that made my stomach drop, notice of intent. There was no warmth in the words, no outrage, just procedure. The kind of letter that existed after someone had already tried kindness and failed. I sat on the edge of the bed in that upstairs room and felt something in me shift from panic into something colder. Not fear, recognition. Graham hadn't been cornered by bad luck. Graham had been navigating. The broker hadn't been surprised. The title company hadn't been malicious. But it had been careless in a way that felt almost intimate, as if my name had been placed into a machine that stamped approved without looking. And Miles had done what he could, but he was still a man working inside a maze drawn by other hands. The trap wasn't one person. The trap was how easily people could hand me certainty while everything beneath it was already collapsing. I called Miles from that upstairs room. My voice sounded unfamiliar to me, flat, stripped of decoration. I found mail, I said, old notices, an attorney letter. It was all here. Miles exhaled slowly. It doesn't change anything, I said. The words came out before I could soften them. He didn't argue. No, he admitted, it doesn't. It supports intent, but the timeline still runs. That sentence, timeline still runs, followed me out of the house and into the cold air. On the drive back, I passed the vineyard sign at the entrance. Carved wood, tasteful font, the kind of branding that turned land into romance. I thought it meant something. Now it looked like a costume. I spent nights reading every line of my closing documents, hunting for the moment my life had been traded away. The signatures were mine. The dates were real. My initials sat beside clauses that blurred responsibility until it vanished. I realized how much of the process had relied on my desire to believe it was safe. Not stupidity. Hope is a lever. It moves quietly, it makes heavy things lift. The next letter arrived with a date that made my chest tighten. A scheduled sale. A public event like a community gathering. The vineyard reduced to a line item on a courthouse bulletin. I held the paper and imagined strangers bidding on the land I'd already paid for, as if my investment was a story that could be overwritten by a louder voice. I didn't cry. I didn't rage. I sat at my kitchen table and felt my mind press against the walls of the situation, searching for a door that wasn't there. Outside, the city traffic moved on. Somewhere, vines slept in winter soil, indifferent to ownership. And inside me, the realization settled into place with a quiet finality. I had purchased a dream that had already been sold twice before my signature ever touched the page. And the paperwork didn't care what I called it.